episode of From Complex to Queens, Home Run Applesauce's minor league podcast. My name is Lucas Vlahos, and this week I'm joined by Ken Levin and Thomas Henderson. How are you guys doing this week?
Good.
I'm doing good.
It is officially the time of year where I'm tired of it being cold. The weather this week was just appalling. It's truly
awful.
Appalling.
Awful stuff.
Oh, God. On the bright side, the fields at Central Park are open now, so, you know, better times are ahead, one would hope. So I think we're going to have a little bit of a shorter show this week, just because it's the start of the season. We've gone through all the off-season stuff, and nothing in the season has, you know, really unfolded to the extent where we have sweeping statements to make. A friendly reminder to everyone, basically nothing means anything for the first, you know, 4 to 6, until May. At a minimum, right? Like, this is all just noise until then. That said, that means we have a time for promote, extend, trade this week. I believe Thomas and I talked about the sort of roster setup 2 weeks ago. Now that we have the final announcements, which are largely in line with what we had expected, though there are some slight tweaks, one of which we'll talk about later, just on pure watchability, which rosters are you promoting, extending, and trading this year in the Mets farm system? We'll keep it to the full season affiliates, so just Syracuse, Binghamton, St. Lucie, and Brooklyn. St. Lucie still comes before Brooklyn in my mind. It's very annoying.
Yeah. It's a tough one. Because I feel like the most... excuse me. I feel like the most watchable one is Syracuse, surprisingly, or because like Brooklyn's offense is kind of bad and their pitching's really interesting, but their offense is like whatever, especially with Reimer hurt. And like Syracuse has a bunch of like Gilbert should be up this year, assuming he's okay, because he got pulled with an injury today. Mm-hmm. And Acuna could be up this year, and there's some pitching guys like Scott and Budo and even Lucchese and stuff like that. So from a Mets standpoint, I think that's the most watchable roster. And the rest just have flaws. Like, the Binghamton roster is kind of okay. It's just a little in between, like we said last week, I think. And Brooklyn is more... the pitching in Brooklyn is my favorite. So they probably get extended.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would switch the order, I think. No, there's obviously a ton of talent in Syracuse, but I think the impact of what's going to happen in Brooklyn this year is probably bigger, and that makes it more interesting to watch just on the mound. Though, again, to your point, like Reimer apparently like really fucked his hamstring if he's going to be missing, if he's on the 60-day IL already, so that's a touch concerning, certainly.
Yeah, like that's an actual injury. That's not like a 15-day and he's back and it's kind of whatever. Like, 60-day for a hamstring is, that's up there.
And as a guy who, you know, we've talked about his defensive limitations, you know, needing to kind of wring every bit of athleticism he can out of what he has, any sort of lower body problems are concerning. Now, you know, obviously hamstring stuff will linger for a season, typically isn't a long-term problem, but you never know, right? So, also sucks because who the hell is even playing in the corners for Brooklyn now? I've seen, they did put, and I thought this was interesting, they put Ryan Clifford in left field in the first game of the season yesterday, and he also led off. I liked.
Leading off is cool.
Yep. And, you know, you might as well keep him in the outfield until he proves that it's not viable, right? Just to see what works out there. But it also feels like the kind of guy an old school manager would just stick it forth and never think about it further. I'm glad they're doing something more interesting down there.
And him leading off is interesting too, because it's like he's getting more at bats per game just from a pure prospect development standpoint. He might get 5 at bats in a game, where if he was hitting fourth, he might get 4 if it's one of those days, you know, like, or if he's hitting 5 or 6 is even less. So I like that too, because I like giving him, it's doesn't matter that he's slow, it matters that he's playing a lot. Like, I wouldn't want him leading off in the big leagues probably, but like Kyle Schwarber has done it, so who cares, I guess. But yeah.
If Ryan Clifford turns into Kyle Schwarber, I think we'll all be very, very pleased with that result, despite how frustrating Kyle Schwarber can be to watch it sometimes, I imagine. And then the roster I'm trading is, and we talked about this, it's surprisingly Binghamton. Like, after Jet, there's just so little I care about on this roster. Which is... Yep. A little strange. They did play Jet at shortstop in the first game of the season, though, so interesting there. Ken, where are you at in all of this?
I think I'm extending Syracuse for the same reasons Thomas is. Probably going to promote Binghamton solely because Jet is there, and mm-hmm. I think he's arguably the most interesting prospect on the team, in the organization. And I'm going to trade St. Lucie for no other reason than... I don't know. It's the furthest away and kind of boring.
Yeah, well, didn't you see that Nick Morbido hit a ninth inning home run and Colin Houck hit a sacrifice fly in a triple?
Houck has been hitting the ball really hard, to be fair.
God. Look, I'm going to be very happy if both of these guys prove us wrong. Where'd you see that Houck has been hitting the ball that hard? I don't know that I'd seen that news myself.
I think his triple was hit hard too. I think I was watching it, and I don't have like the raw numbers, but mm-hmm. Because I have MLB TV, so, and it was on, and he smoked it.
That's something. Look, the big problem with Houck, and I think we've talked about this, we might have even included it in his write up. Like, he basically didn't impact the ball at all in his pro debut after signing, after the draft. And when you're a guy signed as, you know, the sort of prototypical played football, super athletic, looks good in the uniform type of prep shortstop prospect, you know, we might expect you to have some approach problems, some hit tool problems, but, you know, you're supposed to impact the ball really well. And him not doing that was concerning. So, you know, if he's hitting the ball hard again, we got to pay attention. I need more than one game to actually buy into that. Okay. So, with that out of the way, let's move into our draft updates. I promise I didn't do this intentionally, but I really just gave myself the easiest job I've ever had this year with my guys, so I'll just go first because it's super quick. Michael Massey did pitch last Sunday against UNC, one of the top five teams in baseball, in college baseball at the moment. Probably one of his best starts of the year. Still only threw 3 1/3 innings, struck out 5, only walked 2, only gave up a earned run. His line on the season, 1.35 ERA. He's given up like 6 unearned runs somehow. I think Wake Forest has really struggled with their defense. 32 strikeouts, 10 walks, and 20 innings pitched. You know, the walk total is still high. He's still only averaging 3 and change innings per start, which is concerning for a guy who's converting out of the bullpen. He slid. So Baseball Prospectus hasn't updated their draft list since last we spoke, but Prospects Live had, and he's slipped all the way down to 61 on their board. So not going great for him, certainly. Look, if he's a second-round pick, I think that's very exciting in its own right. So not looking great as a prediction for a first-rounder.
Of the Fairfield Inn and Suites by Marriott Scranton Montage Mountain.
Whoops.
Don't think we've ever in how many years of doing that, I don't think we've ever had that happen. That's a good one.
Which is funny because I'm almost always watching something while we're recording.
Oh yeah.
Some
yeah.
game from somewhere.
I have the Brooklyn game. I'm watching Noah Hall struggle, which we'll talk about in a couple minutes here. So yeah, Massey doing his one outing per week, barely pitching that much thing. That's it. Slade Caldwell still doesn't have high school stats posted anywhere. I did see that he had a 4-walk, 3 stolen base, 3-run game. You know, you just you're really catering to me there with that sort of line. That's my shit. Prospects Alive moved him up considerably. He's now 28th on their board. I have some inside information on the upcoming Baseball Prospectus draft board, and he'll be roughly in that same range in the late 20s, which lined him up perfectly to be selected by the Astros and really reinforce my Drew Gilbert comp here, minus the arm. So I'm all for it, but still just destroying everyone he faces in high school as these guys do. And that's it for me. Who wants to go next?
I could go next because mine, it's pretty easy. Cam Caminiti didn't pitch this week. So I think he's fine, though, because he hit a lot. And he hit well. So, yeah, he went 0 for 5 last game, but otherwise he's been fine. He went 2 for 3 on the second, and then he went 1 for 3 with three. Sorry, he went 1 for 4 with a walk on the third. So, yeah, it just is what it is. He didn't pitch this week. I wonder if they're giving him a rest because he's been killing it. Like, he has given up. Let me scroll. He has given up, like, a handful of runs all year. He's given up 2 earned runs and 4 total runs all year. So maybe they're just giving him a week off from pitching because he's been playing. If he wasn't playing, then I'd be more concerned. But I don't think they would risk that if he was hurt.
When do high school baseball playoffs, like, typically roll out?
I think it depends on state, on the state.
Yeah.
Because some high school kids are, like, playing around the draft still.
That's true. Like, the northern kid. Like, I remember when I had Brock Porter, he was still pitching up in Michigan, basically, by the time the draft rolled around or something like that.
Yeah, because he was still, like, I think it depends on the play. I could look into that for next week when his playoffs start. Because I should be able to find that because he's from Arizona. So,
yeah.
It shouldn't be that hard to find. And Kalen Culpepper went off this week. He had multiple three-hit games. He had 2 three-hit games. He had a 2-hit game with 3 RBI. He had 4 RBI in one game. Like, he went crazy this week. So after that slow first week that we had when I first had him, he has really, honestly, he's been better. He's been hit the best he's been this season after that one week where he was like 5 for 16 or whatever it was, which isn't even bad, or 4 for 16. I can't remember what it was off the top of my head, but it was all singles. It was just kind of like a bit of a down week, but he's been great since then. He was really good this week. So I could see them both being back end of the first guys for Caminiti with his commitment to, I think it's Van, I don't remember what school
Louisiana,
it is.
I think. I just had it in front of me. Yes, yeah. Louisiana State.
That's a big school, obviously, so he might go there. And Culpepper is, like, I don't think he'll go in the top half of the draft of the first round, but he's definitely a guy you could take in the late portion of the first round and also have money for other interesting arms and stuff down the line if you want to go that route, which I could see a team doing. Which makes sense for the Mets, too, because they lost out on some slot money from the luxury tax last year.
Thank you, lottery odds.
Yeah.
Prospect Live has Cam Caminiti at 17th and Kalen Culpepper at 23. So basically right in line with what you're saying there.
And I think Caminiti is on a per talent basis higher than that, but an LSU commitment is a tough one. It's not that's a tough school to get someone to get out of.
I mean, it sucks because, like, if Caminiti was on the board at 19, I think that'd be, and things continue as they're going, that'd be a very exciting pick on talent alone.
Yeah, but especially with how they've been doing with arms in the organization.
Absolutely. But to your point, like, I don't know that you can justify the requisite bonus there when your bonus pool has been shrunk so much, which just sucks.
Yeah. It's an annoying... were bad last year, and but it's an annoying consequence of trying to win and failing, which punishing that seems very strange to me when the league has issues with teams not trying to win all the time. I don't know. It's just, I understand why, I understand it from a competitive balance standpoint, but also, like, just get other teams should just get their money up.
I wonder if they could tweak the rule such that, you know, I don't even hate the 10 spot drop at a certain point. Like, and the Mets are, Let me back up. Every team in baseball should be spending more money. The Mets are not the problem with baseball, and they're spending so much more. I understand the desire to, you know, penalize them in some way. Just maybe don't have the penalty if they're in the lottery or something. If a team's in the lottery after spending that much money, like if they're making the, if they're the Dodgers and they're making the playoffs every year and spending a gajillion dollars, yeah, you can slide them down the board a little bit in the interest of competitive balance. But if you're still in the running for a lottery pick, or if you're in the bottom 12 or whatever, maybe that penalty shouldn't apply.
Yeah,
good luck getting any of the cheap teams to agree to that.
Yeah, they would not want that. But I think there's some tweaking to be had there, but also it is what it is, and the Mets have a better, you would think theoretically with Stearns and Gross, a better talent, more front office talent to actually capitalize on being a late first round pick, because Stearns was always drafting around this area with Milwaukee once he took over, because they were always in the playoffs and the Astros were winning World Series all the time. So these guys are used to picking where the Mets are picking. So, I mean, I think there was a quote from Gross that was like, we're picking that high because he's so used to picking like 30, you know?
Yeah.
So,
or not having a first round pick at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, Ken, what are your guys up to, or what were you guys up to this past week?
So I guess we'll start with Beam. He had a rough week. He started one game against Oral Roberts. Not against Georgia, sorry, I was reading the wrong column. He lasted just 2 2/3 innings, gave up 8 hits, 7 runs, 4 of which were earned, walked 2, struck out just 1, and... yeah, not what you'd want. So his season line is now in 37 2/3 innings. He's given up 44 hits, walked 6 against 32 strikeouts. So still well fewer than 9 per 9. Not what you'd want. Although his walks per game per 9 inning is very good at 1.43. So. Kind of more of the same, not missing enough bats, but also not walking many and getting hit a little harder than you'd like for elite college arm type draft pick.
If I recall correctly, Charlie Condon, the presumptive 1-1 guy, hit an absolute tank off a slider from Beam in that game. Just like destroyed it. Then again, he's destroying everything anyone throws him, so perhaps that's not actually meaningful of anything.
And then Carson Bench had a very good week. Not particularly in contact. He went 4 for 16, but he hit 2 home runs, one against Oral Roberts, one against West Virginia. So solid programs. He walked 5 times this past week and only struck out. It walked basically, 5 walks, 5 strikeouts. So, that's a 250, 455, 625 line over 4 games.
I think that's good.
Yeah, that's brought his triple slash for the season to 310, 438, 543. He's walked almost 18.5% of his plate appearances and struck out just above 15%. So, pretty good season so far.
That'll work. I don't know how much you guys have been tracking this. I wonder if we really need to pay more attention to recalibrating our expectations for hitters and pitchers this year in college, because the offensive environment has been so bananas. Great.
Yeah.
Like, I think I was listening to a Baseball America podcast earlier when I was walking Penny, and the average line in the SEC is like 290, 380, 480, something like it's absurd. Offense is just crazy right now. So maybe that makes Beam look better and makes you question Bench a little bit more, but that might be overthinking it, frankly.
Yeah. Well, for good measure, Bench did pitch 1 inning, also against Oral Roberts. He struck out 1, hit a batter, but didn't give up any runs. And now on the season, he has an ERA of 1.00. In 9 innings pitched, has struck out 13 per 9 against 2 walks per 9. as their closer. So you, the dream is alive.
You love that profile
so
much.
I think that's such a cool profile that you just call him in from left field.
It would have worked better before the DH.
Yeah.
But still, I'm surprised, you know, what would have happened if Michael Lorenzen came up now? Would a team have tried that to do that with him instead of saying, no, you got to be a traditional starter and whatever else? That might have been a fun experiment.
I guess it depends entirely upon how good a hitter he is.
Michael Lorenzen hit some tanks back in the day.
Yeah.
What is Michael Lorenzen's career batting line? Maybe I'm vastly overestimating his bat. Loading. No hitter throwing Michael Lorenzen.
Oh yeah, huh?
Just absurd. It is. It always baffles me seeing dudes like Michael Lorenzen or Ronel Blanco or any of these other no-name guys popping off for no hitters, and the Mets, with their incredibly storied history of pitching, have won.
Yeah, it's so funny.
Michael Lorenzen's career line: 84 weighted runs created plus, 233, 282, 429. Not bad. Not bad. While being like a full-time starter most of the time. A lot of strikeouts. Okay. So those are our routine things. As we mentioned at the top here, not that much to go off of so far in the season. Basically, all the affiliates aside from Syracuse have only played one game. Syracuse it themselves have only played 5 games. They're 2-3. Binghamton's 0-1. Brooklyn's 0-1. St. Lucie's 1-0. The only universal performance I think we should talk about here is Christian Scott's impressive start. Struck out 9 in his AAA debut. Sure as hell looks ready for the big leagues. Do you guys catch any of that start or any of the highlights afterwards?
Yeah, I watched it. He was good. He hung like 2 sliders and it was or maybe it was more than that. Like he didn't have great feel for his breaking stuff, but it was also like 30 degrees in Scranton. Like it was cold. So
yeah.
I'm not gonna bust him for that, especially because he was just in spring training and pitching in Florida and all that. But he struck out 9, looked great. Looks like one of the 5 best pitchers who isn't unfortunately eligible for that awards stuff because he wasn't rated on enough lists. So
that's a good point.
So the Mets have unfortunate reason to keep him down.
I don't hate giving Budo a shot first, frankly, but you know it seems pretty clear that Scott's coming before long.
Yes.
Here.
I mean, Scott's the better pitcher. It's just I think I don't mind giving Budo the chance first because you already gave him a lot of innings last year, so there's nothing to. It's already been established that he could pitch. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm fine with Budo being the first guy.
And I like Budo enough that I think he has a chance to stick in the rotation. So I, you know, order of operations here. It's not like they're wasting time with. I'm trying to think of a bad name they would have wasted time with in previous years. And I'm coming up empty.
It's not like a Jared Eichhoff situation, yeah. Or like a Tyler Pill or something like that. Or
yeah.
Now so Eichhoff was outside the org, but.
Whether they should be signing Julio Teheran instead of just calling up Christian Scott is another problem. But the argument there might be, you know, if you don't get Teheran now, someone else will, and then that might impact your depth later on.
I think that has more to do with, like, if McGill is only out for, like, a month and a half or something, then you might have to demote someone and you don't want to mess around with them like that. So it's just – I could also see a world where Teheran's just cooked and it doesn't matter. It's just – he's bad, so
yeah
it kind of depends on how good, because if Teheran pitches fine then I'm okay with it, kind of. I know that's reductive reasoning, but it's also that's how life works.
We've mentioned this idea before. It's not an idea original to us, but you know the swings batters have on a guy will tell you a lot, and at least my impression of watching that Scott start is that dudes were some of the swings on the fastballs were goofy. Just no chance.
Yeah. Also want to point out that friend of the pod, Liam, let me know about the PPI, so whatever it's called, PE, perform, whatever it is.
Prospect you know promotion, what the hell it's sensitive.
So whatever it is, yeah, like, he pointed that out, and I didn't realize it until he did, and
so they
absolutely
have to,
ridiculous that he's not on all the lists, but.
They have to be ranked on two of MLB, Baseball America, and FanGraphs is the third
one? It's something. I don't remember what it is, but he's not on two of them, so.
Ugh, God. Meanwhile, we're going to get the – is Yamamoto eligible for – no, he isn't.
No,
because not all the lists.
Senga wasn't last year.
Yeah, okay. That's good at least. Thinking of who is going to be eligible in terms of big name National League prospects here, but not super significant. Anyway,
also,
Christian Scott is the video you guys heard a minute ago. He just threw a slider that has me a little weak in the knees. Jesus Christ!
The slider, yeah, it looks good.
Very sharp one.
He so that's the new pitch that he added this spring. And I think we saw this in spring as well, that he would have a couple sharp ones, and then he'd also lose it a little bit at times.
Yeah,
which
he's looking for the feel for it now.
Which is fine. Like, it's flashing. It's flashing really nice. And the base stuff that made him great last year is still there. Like, you should be very optimistic about Scott at this point, basically. And I can't imagine he's down for much longer than it takes to claw back the extra year of service.
Yeah, I have a feeling he's magically ready at some point soon. And then we're like, oh, wow, I can't believe that he's already here. Yeah.
I believe at some point in earlier-ish in that start, like maybe it was two innings in or something, his fastball had like an 89% whiff rate on it, or 87% whiff rate on it. Just something disgusting like that. It was fun. It was very fun. Okay, well, that's the one universal performance I wanted to mention. Obviously, with such a limited set of games to talk through here, don't want to go too crazy deep on anyone. So I thought what we'd do is just all pick out one debut performance or one interesting performance from the first couple games and just vamp on that for a little bit here. I'll open up the floor to you guys first, to whoever wants to jump in with your selected dude from the start of the season here.
Hold on. Let me find the tweet first.
The critical research we do to run this pod. Go ahead, Ken.
No, I was just pleasantly surprised by Alex Ramirez. I don't know that anything has changed really, but he did go 2-for-4 and stole a couple of bases. He's certainly very fast. So, you know, I'm not sure how things are going to go for him against high miners' arms, but it was nice that he had a nice little opening day and had a decent performance.
The setup looks better. I don't know if you noticed that.
A little better, yeah. It's hard to I've only seen him take like 3 or 4 swings, but yeah, it doesn't look like he's making the full circle anymore with his hands.
Because I noticed that during spring training, because I saw, I don't remember what game it was, but he was playing.
There's still
and I was
a
like,
little bit of a hitch there, but it's no.
Yeah, but it looks
pronounced.
It looks much cleaner
looks
than it
cleaner,
used.
Cleaner, right.
Yeah.
How, I was personally shocked that he got sent to Binghamton in the first place.
Me too.
Like, I know he would have been triple repeating at Brooklyn, basically, but he's been awful there.
At a certain point, you just have to keep moving him.
I guess, especially since he's on the 40. Because
the next one is he gets cut. You know, if you triple or double repeat Brooklyn and go to Binghamton and don't hit at all, he's probably going to be running out of time.
That's fair.
What? This is something we've talked about for years at this point, though. Why is Alex Ramirez getting promoted and Stanley Consuegra is still in Brooklyn? Stanley Consuegra has been much better.
$2 million spent in a bonus several years ago.
Yeah.
That's not a good reason.
It's not,
the
but...
reason, though.
We never said it's a good reason, Lucas. We just said it's a
reason. It is indeed a reason. True. Especially in this era where teams are, you know, much more over-ripening their hitting prospects, it was a little surprising to me to see him pushed up the ladder. But, you know, good start to the season. Much like with Morbido and Hauk, and I don't know if either of, if Thomas, you were planning to talk about either of them. I hope Alex Ramirez proves us wrong. That'd be great. That'd be awesome. I mean,
the athletic ability is certainly off the charts.
So it's Chris, just
that doesn't always translate to baseball as much as you'd like.
Chris McShane, who runs the site, obviously, and is knowledgeable, but doesn't have as much attention as we do on these prospects. Like had pictures of him, and his remark is just like, "Oh wow, he's tall," and that's always been the selling point with Ramirez. Like he looks the part. This is what it's supposed to look like. Now, does that actually translate into being good?
How?
Who knows? All right, Tom, that's certainly a storyline to follow, and you know, maybe there's a bounce back in there. What do you find interesting so far, Thomas?
So the person I want to shout out is his name is Ernesto Mercedes. He is a reliever. Did I take your guy?
No, I was waiting for someone to Matt's been whispering in your ear too.
Skyler has, but yeah. Skyler. but he was really good in spring.
Yeah.
He struck out 14 batters in only 8 innings, obviously. It's 8 innings. But 14 batters, he topped out at 93. This is all from the FCL Mets' Twitter account. Topped out at 97, which is the tweet I was looking for. Topped out at 97, which is 2 miles per hour more than his last year's high. And he also had a 75% splitter whiff rate. God. And so he's also a big dude. Like, he's a really tall dude. There's a picture of him, like, holding a baseball, and it's like, it's like, looks like nothing in his hand type thing. Like, one of those guys. Mm-hmm. Like, a real, like, just tall, big guy, big arms. And I think he's really interesting because he's in St. Lucie, he's stateside, and he's just a pure reliever. So even though he's 20, he's so young. If he's striking out dudes at that clip, then he's moving up to Brooklyn. That's another interesting guy there. Then he's moving up, and he could be up in a few years because it's relievers could move, you know? Mm-hmm. And he's just interesting because that type of stuff is really electric, and they don't really have a reliever prospect with that type of profile. Like, even when we were like talking up Eric Orsi and even Nate Lavender, like, it's such a different type of guy than this. Like, this is like a power closer, late inning guy, and that's a really interesting profile that's just not really in the system. So I just want to put him on people's radars because, I mean, when you're striking out that many dudes with a splitter and throwing 97, it's gonna get you, even if it's not, even if you don't hit crazy ceilings, that's like an interesting reliever.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
It's definitely a good shout. I was sure he'd come up, you know, at some point this year, in our conversations. My only concern here is that the secondary is a split, and I wonder if that leads to some of the same effects we see with good minor league changeups, where you know, at the levels he's at, none of these guys have ever seen an even passable changeup or an even passable split. I may see one that's good or maybe even just okay, and it looks like fucking sorcery to them. Now, if we had the pitch metrics, we could answer this question much more effectively. But that's the only hesitation I have here at all. Otherwise, I agree with everything you said. Like, there's reason to be excited.
And of course, like, having that half decent split, even if it is the only thing he has right now, the Mets have done such a good job at developing pitchers in the very short term. Like, we talk about it almost every week. So having those two, having a good fastball and a good splitter is a nice basis if they could teach him a sweeper if he doesn't have one already. Because obviously we're not as – it's harder to watch those games than it is anything else, or harder to get the metrics on those games than it is anywhere else. It's really interesting. So
can we just have him – yeah, let's jump him all the way up to Syracuse and make him roommates with Fujinami. And learn that split, like, modify, make his splitter even better by hanging it. Shintaro Fujinami, for those of you who aren't aware, is obviously has no control, but has arguably the best splitter on raw stuff in the big leagues. And I mean, better than anyone else's. He just has no idea where that pitch or any pitch is going most of the time. So Mercedes does not have great control either, but I don't think it's that bad. So let's get Fujinami whisper. Well, Fujinami's interpreter whispering in. You need like two interpreters here. This might be a bit of a challenge, actually. So less ideal than you would have hoped for. Yeah, we'll see. I think probably bump him up to Brooklyn before too long if he keeps the walks in line. He has walked two in two innings so far. So
yes, it's and he's given up a run. Like he hasn't been perfect or anything. Mm-hmm. It's not. This isn't less of a current season performance and more of a he was interesting in spring and he's the type of guy who could all of a sudden be on people's radars. And I just want to put it out there now.
It's a good call. All right, so Thomas and Ken have done positive shouts here. In news that will surprise no one, I'm going to do a bit of a Debbie Downer. We've talked a lot about how the Mets took an interesting set of mid-round college arms in last year's draft, and one of the ones I quite liked was Noah Hall. He was taken out of South Carolina, I believe, in the seventh round, signed below slot. Another one of these IVB darlings. Very much fit the Mets MO for this past draft. He was assigned to he's 23 years old already, so not exactly a spring chicken here. Got assigned to Brooklyn to start the year and did not have a good start by any stretch of the imagination. Gave up four runs in only an inning and a third, walked four, did strike out three, gave up a homer. So not great. The idea here being that we really do want to follow how a lot of these college arms develop throughout the year and use that as a barometer of the Mets pitching development program. Sproat and McLean are obviously the big names to watch, but what they do with these, you know, mid-round arms like Hudepohl or Thompson or Hall is also going to be, you know, really key, because if you're a good team, you're getting jumps out of these sort of guys as well. I believe I said
Hudepohl currently dealing, I believe.
Yes, he is. So I could have gone totally positive and said that instead. With Hall though, I will say we've made this excuse for a lot of pitchers on the major league roster already. We were just making this excuse for Christian Scott to a degree. It's fucking cold everywhere in the Northeast right now. This dude's from South Carolina. He's pitching in Florida before this. He's probably like, what the fuck is happening right now? Why am I on a baseball field? This is miserable. It wouldn't surprise me if that's really what the problem was here. The command certainly wasn't there last night, but there were when he got the fastball up in the zone, he was inducing some swings that looked a little silly from guys who just couldn't catch up to the amount of vertical break he has. And he also pulled off a couple changeups that looked really nice. One of them for a strikeout in this big spot. He needed it in the second. Now, just looked like the thing fell off a table. Again, same idea with the minors making it difficult to evaluate changes in splits that comes into play here. But I think there's still stuff to like, and I'm not out on it after, you know, one bad outing and a miserable night out on Coney Island. Like it must have been 40 degrees with the wind blowing too.
Oh, I could not imagine. I haven't seen them yet, but oh my God, that's so really so cold. Like just, it's an awful viewing experience this early in the season. I could not imagine playing.
Yeah, I keep every year. I've actually never been out to Brooklyn. Shockingly, I keep telling myself I'll go, and I never do. I cannot imagine going early in the season. Looking at the people behind, so I'm watching the start, rewatching the start right now. Like watching the people behind home plate, they look fucking miserable. They've got like 16 layers on, contemplating their life decisions. Why am I here? Why is this what I've chosen to do with my Friday night in April? I could have been doing anything else, and I'm just freezing in a game Brooklyn is losing by four runs in the fourth inning.
Look, childhood me had partial season tickets to the Cyclones. I was cold plenty of times in that state.
It's a lot easier to do that when you're a little kid as opposed to I've really noticed my tolerance for the cold falling off a cliff as I've aged here. I'm assuming this is a sign of the end times or something like that. Okay, well, we'll have a lot more updates on these and many other guys as we go through the season, of course. already mentioned a couple of the interesting things to keep an eye on this early in the season. Jets playing shortstop, Clifford's playing left. You know, we'll see how that develops over the course of the next week. If that was just a, we'll give him one game there to start the season, or if it's going to be a permanent thing, worth following on both fronts. In the meantime, you can listen and subscribe to all of our Home Run Applesauce podcasts through Apple Podcasts. We also encourage you to rate and review if you enjoy the show. You can also find it on Spotify or wherever else you get podcasts. You can visit our Patreon for bonus episodes. I believe there was one recorded. We recorded another bonus episode earlier this week. I was working till midnight that night, so I didn't chime in. But Thomas, you were there, yes?
Yeah, we weighed in on the Owen whatever start, and I was like, it happens. And then they won the next day.
Well, the next 2 days.
Yeah, so.
Thomas transitioning.
The weirdest game today. I don't know if you watched it, but.
I have not yet.
It's so weird.
Thomas transitioning to be the positive one is truly a welcome experience, honestly. The level of very level-headed. It's great. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email the show at fromcomplextoqueens@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. Steve is at Steve Saipa. I'm at ElVlahos343. Ken is at KenLavin91. And Thomas is at SadMetsSCN. Until next week. Love the Mets. Love the Mets.